Morning, today's daf nida is Yud Ches. We're on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We left off with the words Tani Rabbi Chiya. Mishnah yesterday on Yud Zayin Amud Beis introduced us to the Mashal of the Chachamim. The Chachamim gave us a way to view the anatomy of a woman, and they gave us a schematic in terms of how to look at her body. And as a result of that, based on the schematic that's given, so it'll allow us to determine whether she's a nida or whether she's not a nida. Here are the givens that we know. A woman has a makor, she has a uterus, she has a prusdor, a canal. Then the Mishnah describes an aliyah, some sort of attic. Now that attic that's on the top, not perfectly clear exactly what they're describing anatomically. Yesterday I described it as a bladder. It doesn't have to be the bladder. A bladder is a candidate. It's not the only candidate. But as far as just a basic understanding of the Mishnah, rudimentary understanding of the Mishnah, so it'll work. It's certainly not saying that I know for certain that's what it is, but it's certainly a candidate. With that stated, so we know the following, that when blood emerges from the uterus, enters into the canal, so she's a nida. We established that in day one of the Masechta, and we continue to say that. The consideration that we learned yesterday was the 17th day of the Masechta. So what we learned yesterday is that there could very well be that the blood comes from another source, i.e. the aliyah, the bladder. And if the blood were to come from the bladder and go into the canal from the bladder, so she is not a nida, because that's not dam hamakor. That's dam of something else, and that's not going to make her a nida. So the Mishnah says that if we find blood in the canal, so the Mishnah actually makes it very simple and very clear. The Mishnah simply says that if blood is found in the canal, ches kasam and a makor. Well, the preponderance of evidence and the general trend is that blood is coming from the makor, and therefore we're going to assume she's an ida. That's the Mishnah, and it was actually very straightforward. The glaring issue is that not 100% clear that the aliyah is made reference to in the Mishnah as a bladder, but nevertheless, the point of the Mishnah is super simple. Blood in the canal is going to be assumed to be from the uterus, and therefore she's going to be an ida. That's the Mishnah. Where do things get a lot more complicated is when we started with the Gemara yesterday. Because the Amoraim, when learning the Masechta of Nida, so they added one more detail. A detail that we didn't see back in the Mishnah, and this detail made things a lot more complicated. So what I'm going to do now is as follows. I'm going to read it from the Gemara. Well, I know we did it yesterday, but as you will see, first half of today's daf is really all predicated around this discussion. So there are four opinions. It's just a lot of information. So I think it'd just be easier for all of us if we all saw it together inside. Rami Bar Shmuel, Rav Yisrael, Bered Rav Yehuda, Nida Bei Rav Huna. So a number of Amoraim are learning Masechta Nida in the yeshiva of Rav Huna. Ashkechinu Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Diazavik Amri. Now they find Rav Bar Rav Huna, and he was saying the following. Hachedmi Bifnim Va'aprozmi B'chuz V'aliyah B'nu Yashtehem. So far, an anatomical description that we saw back in the Mishnah, it's the same. With the makor in the back and the prusdor in the front and the aliyah built on the top of them. And here is the wrinkle. V'lu pasuch bein aliyah l'prusdor. Now there is some sort of tube, pathway, that gets us from the aliyah into the prusdor. So what the Amoraim now are describing is basically where, and again, I'll say the bladder just so simply so that, you know, I could talk in English, but everyone understand that it doesn't have to be the bladder. And the problem with saying that it's the bladder is that anatomically it doesn't match what we know where the bladder and the urethra go. So admittedly, what I'm saying is not anatomically correct, but I'm just, you know, it's just a way for me to talk in English. So basically what we're describing over here is that the bladder is going to go into the canal. It's going to deposit into the canal through some sort of lull, through some sort of pathway. And what it's going to do is it's bisecting the canal. And it's bisecting the canal where we can now divide the canal into two areas. We can the interior and the exterior. The interior now between the uterus and this lull, and the exterior from the lull to the outside. And now with this bisection, so now the question becomes as follows. What if I find blood in either of these two areas, the interior area or the exterior area? So here's what the Amoraim are going to do. We didn't see this in the Mishnah, by the way. The Mishnah made it all so simple. Here the Amoraim are making it more complicated. So what we're now saying is that if we find blood and we know from which region the blood came from, whether it came from the interior canal, the exterior canal, so it's going to make a difference halachically. Okay. And if you think about it, again, assuming what they assumed, it actually makes sense. Because if I found an interior canal, so that means to say that strong chance, I could say it even stronger, but it came from the uterus. If I found it in the exterior of the canal and I didn't see it in the interior of the canal, so then you have to wonder, why is it in the exterior? Why is it in the interior? Oh, because it dropped from the aliyah, it dropped from the bladder into the canal. And that's not uterine blood, that's other blood, and therefore she's tahara. So based on what they thought, what they perceived to be the correct anatomical analysis, it makes sense what they're saying. However, again, the problem is... based on what they understood, based on that, how they understood it to work. Right. Okay, with that, all that stated, now, as far as making a distinction, is there a distinction to be made? So there are a lot of opinions, which is why I wanted to start from the beginning, because I just wanted to see all the opinions inside. So, Hashem lo pasuk ben aliyah leprozdor nimsa ben aluliv nim sveko tameh. So we're going to start with the first opinion, and that is that if you find it from the lul interior, it's sfeiko tame. Likelihood is that it's tame, not saying it definitively, but sfeiko tame. Min aluv lachutz sfeiko tahor. And if I find it exterior, so then we're going to say it's tahor. So asa v'amar le la'avu sfeiko tame amar lan mar v'ha'anan shechaz kasam and amakortanan. How could you say sfeiko tame? Sfeiko tame when you find it in the interior? The Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if I find it inside, cheskaso min ha-makor. We presume it to be from the makor. You're talking about a suffix? It's a chazaka. So amale ana hachi kamina. So he says, okay, this is what I meant. Min aluv lefnim vaday tamay. Min aluv lechutz sfeiko tamay. Okay, so a redaction to my position. My position now is that if I find it in the interior section of the canal, so it's vaday tamay. If I find the exterior section of the canal, sfeiko tamay. Meaning now that there are two possibilities of where that blood comes from. Either it comes from the aliyah, or it came from the makor. So it's a suffix. And by virtue of the fact that it was in the exterior section, not the interior section, suffix. Okay. So this is what now we have so far are two registered positions. One position is that interior sfeiko tame, exterior sfeiko tahor. Or second opinion is, it's a redacted position, is that interior vaday tame, exterior sfeiko tame. And now we get to Abaye, which Abaye now is going to give us two more opinions. Amar Abaye Maishlam min aluv lachutz desfeko tami de dama shachta umecheder asa min aluv lefninami ema izdakra umealia asa. So first Abaye points out, look, we are making a lot of assumptions, obviously. And on top of that, we're also assuming that the woman was stationary. Woman's not stationary. Woman's in motion. She's standing, she's sitting, she's lying down. She's rolling over while she's sleeping. So to say now that because we found the blood in a particular area, either the interior or the exterior, means that necessarily came from the source that was proximate to it? Not necessarily. By virtue of the fact that the woman's turning around all the time, it can easily be explained that it was sourced from one place, but because of her turning and because of her shift of gravitational pull, so it could very well be that's located in a different place in the canal. And just because I found blood in the interior doesn't mean that it didn't come from the bladder. It could have came from the bladder, deposited into the exterior portion of the canal, and then, by her turning around, so it now goes into the interior section. All these are possibilities. So, if this is a concern, it's always going to be a chashash. And we're always going to put it under the category of suffix. But if I don't take that into consideration, but I just take chazak into consideration, min aluv lefnim vaday tamei, min aluv lachutz vaday tahor. So then I'm going to say that I'm going to go work with chazakas. Interior section comes from the uterus, therefore tamei. Exterior section is coming from the aliyah, therefore tahor. So what we have in front of us now are no less than four opinions in terms of finding the dam in various sections of the canal, interior versus exterior. And the question now is, what is going to be her status under those circumstances? Tani Rabbi Chiya, the Gemara quotes of Braisa of Rabbi Chiya. Dama nimsa b'prus v'chayev alav abiyas mikdash. V'storfen alav v'sachuma. So the Gemara now is going to be recording two Braisas. Braisa number one of Rabbi Chiya is that if I find dam in the prosdor, so one would be subject to bias mikdash and storfen alav v'sachuma. Otherwise stated, she is absolutely temeya. She goes into the base of mikdash while under those circumstances. It is a violation of Tumas HaMikdash. We discussed that extensively in the beginning of Masechta Shavuos. If she were to touch Truma after having the dam go into the Prizdor, so then the Truma is to be destroyed. Meaning it's not a suffix that she's a Nida, and therefore the Truma is not to be destroyed nor to be eaten, but rather Vadai. So here in our first Brice of Rabbi Chia, we're saying that this woman is definitively a Nida. Rav Ketina Amarin Chayav Malal B'yas Mikdash Vein Sorfen Lavetz HaTruma. Now, Rav Ketina says, no. Despite the fact that Dam was found in the Prizdor, nevertheless, Sofek. And so therefore, she's not going to be Chayav a Karban for B'yas Mikdash, meaning, to be clear, she can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. That's an absolute. But at the same time, however, if she does, she's not going to bring a Karban. Because the only time you bring a Karban is when you definitively know you violate an Isser, and here we don't definitively know. On top of that, she touches Truma. We're not going to burn the Truma because we don't definitively know she's a Nida and we don't definitively know the Truma is Tamea. Now, I have two statements. One with Vaday and the other Safek. Can we make any kind of Shalom between these two statements? And that's what the Gemara is going to attempt to do based on all the opinions that have been recorded. Now, if I work with Abaye and Chashash, that we're always concerned because the woman is always going to be moving, not in a stationary position, but rather in a moving position, and so therefore blood can go from the interior to the exterior or vice versa. So that means then that according to Abaye and Chashash, that means to say it's always going to be suffix regardless of where the blood's going to be located. Mm-hmm. Well, that means then, Misayil al Rav Ketina, this will only be supportive of Rav Ketina's statement of suffix. And upligi the Rabbi Chia, and he can't agree with Rabbi Chia because it comes out now that a woman will never be a vadai nida, which, if you think about it for a moment, is like an amazing statement. A woman will never be a vadai nida, but again, given the explanation, you understand it. But just it's rather amazing that a woman will never be a vadai nida because we don't know whether it came from the Makor, whether it came from the Aliyah, and because she's always turning around. It could shift around with inside of her. It's rather amazing.
Yeah, but we know that she had a cycle, so how can you say?
I know. How can you say? but the Gemara said it.
You can say there's always a suffix.
That's what he says. He says it's always a suffix.
Yeah,
okay, I know. I'm highlighting. That's what I'm doing. I'm just highlighting that it's an amazing conclusion. Lahachlish, based on that one opinion. Now, if I went with the other viewpoint of Abaye, where we were only working with chazakas, so that means what? It's binary. She's either a nida or she's not a nida. If it's found interior, she's a nida. If it was found exterior, she's Torah Lagamre. And now that means then that this would be a siyua for Rabbi Chia, corroborating the statement to Rabbi Chia, that she violated B'yas HaMikdash and the Truma you're going to have to burn. And it's going to argue with Rav Ketina because Rav Ketina has this area of Suffolk. According to Abaye and Chazaka, there is no area of Suffolk. Now, Li Rav Huna Lo Pligi. Now, as far as Rav Huna's position is concerned, that goes all the way back to the very beginning of the Sugya. According to Rav Huna, actually, the two statements of Rabbi Chia and Rav Ketina are not in argument with one another, but rather, Shalom. How? The lo pligi kan min aluv lifnim kan min aluv lachutz, because it's very simple. It depends where the dam is found. If the dam is found in the interior, according to Rav Huna, that's vadai tamei. If the dam is found in the exterior, according to that would go like Rav Ketina, which would be suffek. Good. So that means to say that now Rav Ketina and Rabbi Chia are actually reflecting where the dam is to be found. Ela l'Rami bar Shmuel ula Rav Yitzchak bereid Rav Yehuda da'amrei. However, let's go back to the first opinion that we first encountered when discussing that it makes a difference where the dam is to be found. They say min alo v'lachut sveiko tahor, that if it's from the low exterior, so then sveiko tahor. Min alo v'lefnim sveiko tamei. And if it's found on the interior, so then the suffix is going to be tamei. So hani b'may metukma. So how then are you going to navigate the two statements of Rabbi Chia and Rav Ketina? So if we're going to go from the lul interior, lema pligi de Rabbi Chia. So that means to say that they're going to be arguing with Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Chiya talked about Vandai Tamei, and they're only talking about, at most, Suffolk. Lokasha, Kankish Nimsa, Bekarka Prusna, Vekankish Nimsa, Begag Prusna. And finally, the Gemara now gives us one more variable to take into consideration. And that is, not only are we going to be talking about interior versus exterior, but we're also going to be talking about floor versus ceiling. On a normal scenario where the dam were to come out of the makor and run down the prosdor, so under normal circumstances, it would go down the floor of the prosdor and not the ceiling of the prosdor. The ceiling of the prosdor would give an indication that it was there and it shifted around inside. On the other hand, if it came directly from the makor through the prosdor outside, so the general path it would go down would be down the floor of the prosdor and not the ceiling of the prosdor. So even within the positions of these Amorayim, Rami Bar Shmuel, Rav Yisrael Bered, Rav Yehuda, even though they said at the beginning of the sugya that if I find it in the interior, at best it's a suffix, so now we're going to modify just a little bit. And we're throwing in one more variable. That if you find it in the interior and it was also found on the floor as opposed to the ceiling of the prosdor, so even they're going to admit and agree that it's a vadai and it's not going to be a suffix. Okay. And now what just occurred now is that the Gemara took all four positions that were laid out in the beginning and saw whether or not it could be plugged in to the statements of Rabbi Chiya and Rav Ketina. Rav Chiya says vadai tamei, Rav Ketina says suffix. And can these positions now work in concert together with these two positions? That's what the Gemara did in the first part of today's daf. Continuing in the Gemara, now we move to a, not new topic, but new discussion. So Rav Yochanan says that there are three occasions in Halacha where the Chachamim followed the Rov and treated the Rov like a Vadai. The statement of Rav Yochanan in of itself, even before we count out the three, requires, obviously, a lot of explanation. We're going to treat a Rov like a Vadai. First of all, what's a Rov? So as we know, Rov is a majority. Majority means to say that there is either, majority is Ruva de Issa Kaman. I have all the choices in front of me, all the candidates in front of me, and now I'm just simply going to count. And we're going to operate based on Rov. A simple example, a Sanhedrin. A Sanhedrin's going to take a vote, and based on the number who say one way and the number say the other way, so we're going to go with the majority. That's a rov. Another type of rov is a ruba de lesa kaman, where the rov is not in front of me, but rather where it's just based on statistics. Statistically speaking, this happens more often, more frequently. That's another form of a rov. Anyway, in both of those circumstances, what do we know? Rov is going to be a determinant in halacha. Back in Chulin, towards the beginning, Yud Aleph, around thereabouts, in Chulin, so we discussed how do we know the sources of Rov. But Rov is very strong. It's a powerful determinant. In fact, if I have Rov against Chazaka, Ruba v'Chazaka, Ruba Adif. Rov is stronger than Chazaka. So Rov is really strong. It will determine the Halacha. Rav Yochanan's statement over here is that, you know, there are three times in Halacha where Rov is so strong, it's going to be treated like a Vadai. It's hard to understand. Rov is always so strong. We always treat Rov like a Vadai. Rov is going to determine the Halacha, right? The case that we're going to see later this morning. Nine stores, or ten, right? Mm-hmm. Ten stores, nine of them sell kosher, one of them sell non-kosher. Mm-hmm. And there's a piece of meat found in the street. And now you pick it up, where did it come from? Rov will tell me it came from the kosher store. Rov will allow me to eat it. That's not a suffix, that's a Vadai. If I'm eating it, it means we assume that it's kosher, based on the principle of Rov. So the statement of Rav Yochanan that only in three places Rov is to be treated like a Vadai, it's a difficult statement in of itself. And what's so special about these three particularities? Why over here in these three? So as we go through the Gemara today, we're going to have a somewhat better understanding, but I'm going to be honest with you, even after going through the Gemara, it's still going to be a little bit challenging. What's so special that Rav Yochanan is teaching us over here? So again, some of that question is going to be answered over the course of this morning. I don't think all of it will be, but you know, a good part of it will be. Okay, what are the three cases where Rov is going to be treated like a Vadai? Mekor, Shilya, Chaticha. So there are three cases, and the Gemara is going to go and explain each one of the three cases. Mekor HaDamaran. So as far as Mekor is concerned, so we already learned that in our Mishnah. The idea that I find Dam in the Prusdor, And where did it come from? So cheskaso min ha-makor. So it comes most often from the makor. By the way, just in terms of our terminology, it does get a little bit confusing because Rav and Chazaka sometimes are different. Rav and Chazaka are sometimes synonymous. And it really just depends on the context of the Gemara. Over here, clearly, when we say cheskaso min ha-makor, what we really mean, let's put that in a sentence, most of the time it's coming from the uterus. Meaning, it's a rov. Granted, the Mishnah uses the word chazaka, but it's a chazaka based on rov. That's better than I said it. Okay, shilya. We're up to number two. Shilya did now, we learned in a Mishnah, shilya bebeis habayis, shilya bebeis habayis tamei. So the case over here, it's a Mishnah. Mishnah is going to come up a couple of times in our Masechta. Talks about a afterbirth. So an afterbirth is found in the house. So the house now is going to be assumed an ohel mace. There was a mace in the house. Now it's not the afterbirth. The afterbirth is not the mace. Right. It's not human remains. Veloshia shulya vlad. I don't have to say it so clearly. The Mishnah says it as clear as it could. The afterbirth is not a vlad. Elishain shulya below vlad. It's just that right now we have evidence that is overpowering. We know that with the afterbirth there was a birth. Right? Get it? Birth, afterbirth? Okay, good. Right? And I'm not even a doctor. So so we know that there was a birth. Right now, the only glaring issue is, well, where is the remains? Okay, we don't know. But the point is that if there was an afterbirth, there was a birth. And so therefore, we're assuming now that there was a mace in the house, and everything is going to be tummy with Thomas mace. These are assumptions that we're making based on a Rov. Rabbi Shimon Omar Nimoka Vlad Ashalo Yatza. Now Rabbi Shimon says no. That the fetus disintegrated before it came out, and so it did not come out as remains, it came out only as biological fluids, and it became tummy with all the other fluids, and so according to Rabbi Shimon, we're not going to say that. But short of Rabbi Shimon, going back to the sheet of the Tanakama, based on the Rov, we're saying that the house is going to be tummy. Next and third case is Chaticha. Didnan, we learned in a Mishnah. Bapalas Yad Chatucha V'regel Chatucha. Imo Temeya Leid of Ein Choshishin Shema Miguf Atum Bata. We're going to learn this a lot over the course of our Masechta, and that is a woman having given birth and a woman becoming Temeya as a result of her giving birth. Meaning it's not because the blood comes out while she's giving birth, it's the act of giving birth, and not just birth, but to a Vlad. It has to be a fetus. Now it doesn't have to be viable, but it has to be a fetus. It has to be where the fetus is developed so much that you're able to see some detail of the fetus. So, if the only thing that was discovered post-miscarriage, post the miscarriage of the fetus, is a hand or a foot that was detailed, but there is no other detailed portions of the fetus that emerged, so here's what we're going to say. It was really a developed fetus. And by virtue of the fact that our only evidence is only going to be either a hand or a foot, that's enough evidence. And we're going to assume that the rest of the fetus was detailed enough so that the woman, the mother, is going to be a tumas leida. That, of course, again, is going to be based on the concept of rov. The majority of the time, when you find a hand or when you find a foot, so that means to say now that the rest of the fetus was also outlined and detailed. We don't know where it is. Okay, it's absence right now. We don't have a good explanation, but we have enough evidence to say it was a fetus. These are the three circumstances in halacha where we're going to take the rov and we're going to treat it like a vaday. What is it? What does that mean? We're going to take the rov and treat it like a vaday? What does that mean? So in all these circumstances, what it means is as follows. I'll go one by one. As far as the case of the makor is concerned, so it means now that we don't know with absolute certainty that it came from the uterus. But we're saying that there's strong enough evidence it came from the uterus. In other words, the rov is going to be treated like a vaday, and she's going to be not a possible nida, not a probable nida, a nida, period. Okay, that is number one. Number two and number three are really going to be the same point, and that is shilyan chaticha. Shilyan chaticha, well, that doesn't have to be the exact same point, but let's start with shilya. In the case of shilya, so it's the afterbirth, it's not the baby. Where's the baby? I don't know. But the baby came out. It's absence right now. I can't explain, but the baby came out. Everything in this house now is going to be treated like Tumas, that it was shared the same roof with Tumas Mace. And therefore, everything is going to be Tame. And that's, we're not saying Safek Tame, we're saying Vaday Tame. If, let's say, for example, there was Truma in the house, that Truma is going to be burnt. Meaning, it's not a probability, we're treating it as if it happened. And finally, same thing we're going to be saying regarding the Yad, or the Regal. Right? The detailed hand, the detailed foot. We don't know any other part of the fetus. We don't have any other part of the fetus. But what we're going to say is that she is not possibly having given birth. She definitively has given birth. That means then that she's going to bringing karbanos. The karbanos that she's going to bring at the conclusion of her tumas leida, it's going to be a chatas. It's going to be an ola. Chatas is going to be eaten by a kohen. We know for sure that she gave birth. Again, the rov is dictating that she did give birth, and we're saying bavados.
Okay.
So in terms of the number of days, we're gonna spend a lot of time with that. Actually, we'll spend some time with that today, and we're gonna be spending a lot of time with that later on in terms of if the what came out was indescribable in terms of gender. Okay, well that will come up. In the meantime, however, this is a statement of Rav Yochanan. The Gemara is bothered by how narrow a statement it is. Three times will we treat the rov like a vadai? Only three times? What are you talking about? V'su leka v'ayika teisha chanios. What about the case of the nine stores? Detain teisha chanios kulan mochros basar shkuta. V'achas mochros basar nevela. So the classic scenario, right? We saw this back in Chulin. A classic scenario where you have nine stores and they're all selling kosher except one of them. V'lakach me'achas me'em v'ini yodeh me'ezem me'em lakach sveko. Also v'nimtza halachach harov. And so here the Braisa introduces us to the idea of Kavua versus Kol Deparish. Kavua. The idea behind Kavua is that the Suffolk started in a place that was stationary. Meaning, I walked into one of the stores to buy, and I forgot which store I walked in. Now, I always get pushback because, and I like this point, I know there's an answer to this point, but if we're talking about somebody who generally only buys kosher, What would that person be doing in the non-kosher store? Why is there even a suffix that he walked into the non-kosher store in order to buy? Okay.
He just moved into the neighborhood. He didn't know.
Okay. Anyway, so but if the suffix occurs in the store, meaning he didn't remember which store he walked in, this is now the classic example of kavua. Now the halach is like this: Kol kavua kemechsa mechsadami. When a suffix comes from something which is stationary, so at that point in time, whatever the numbers are disregarded. Even though the stronger likelihood is that they walked into a kosher store than a non-kosher store. Draws from a simple statistical standpoint of there are more kosher stores than non-kosher stores, but if the suffix is coming from a stationary body, i.e. the store, so then we say kol kavua kemechza machzadami, it becomes 50-50. Is there a rational way to understand that? So right now I'll say no, because that's the easiest way to say it. There is no, I could try and give rationale and reason to why this should be, but for the time being right now, that's the halacha, and that's what's called kavua. And then there's called kol deparish meruba kaparish, which is what we're more used to hearing about. Where, let's say a meat from that store was taken out of the store and brought into the middle of the street. And granted, by the way, you're really not going to be that interested in a piece of meat that's lying in the middle of the street, but it's wrapped, it's packaged, no seal on it, we don't know where it came from. So what do we say over there? Kol deparish, meruba kaparish. Now when something now is moved away from its source, it's no longer stationary, but it's an item in motion. Doesn't mean it has to be in motion at the time when you pick it up, but it experienced motion. So kol deparish, when it separates, meruba kaparish. So now it goes from the rove of the stores are kosher, this meat is kosher. We're not saying probably kosher.
It is
kosher. So now what the Gemara is bothered by is Rav Yochanan, you're saying only three times we treat a rov like a vadai? It's a lot more than three. And this is just but one example. Tuma kamrinan, iso lo kamrinan. The Gemara's response is very simple. Rav Yochanan was only discussing in the world of Tuma. In the world of Tuma, there are three times where a suffix is going to be sorry. I didn't say correctly. Where the rove is going to be treated like a vadai. In other areas of halacha, we're going to treat a rove like a vadai. Rav Yochanan was limiting his comments only to the world of tuma, of Taharos. Vahika, the Gemara says, okay, but I know of other cases in Taharos. Teisha Tzvardim v'sheretz echad b'neihem. So you have nine frogs and you have a sheretz. Now a frog, right? No one really, aside from the children, want to pick up a frog and play with a frog. But frogs, even after they're dead, are not a source of tumah. The only items that are a source of tumah after they're dead is only shmona shratzim, only eight of the shratzim. And the Torah gives us a list of the eight, and good luck in terms of identifying what they are nowadays. But anyway, but the point over here is as follows. So there are nine frogs and there's one sheretz. You touch one, you don't know which one you touch. So if this were to occur in a Rishus Yachid, that'd be a suffix which is tummy. In a Rishus Rabim, that would be a suffix which is tahor. What we're doing over here, it's so interesting. We're putting really two concepts together, side by side. Meaning, concept number one, I touched one of them, I don't know which one I touched. Well, aren't we going to work with the majority? Not if they were stationary. If they were stationary items, so now we have the principle of kavua. Kol kavua kemechsa mechsa dami. So because they're stationary, so therefore, we treat it like 50-50. That's principle number one. Principle number two is that now it's mechsa mechsa, it's 50-50. So if it's suffix, I don't know which one I touched. And now it becomes a question which one I touched. So what do we know about suffix tumma? Safik tumah b'rishos ha'yachid, sveiko tameh. Safik tumah b'rishos ha'rabim, sveiko tahor. So good. So you take these two basic principles, you put them together, and you know what the halacha is. Uvenimsa halacha acharov. However, if of the collection of dead dead little shratzim, if from this collection one of them was taken away, and after it was taken away, you touch that one that was taken away, so this is parish, and called the parish meruba kaparish. Now that came from the majority, and so therefore, when you touched it, are you tame? No, not you're not probably tame. You're not tame. You're definitively not tame. So here we have an example where it's roven. Based on the rove, we're going to say that it is a vadai, right? And the person will be tahor. So tumas isha kamrina and tumah ba'amalo kamrina. So again, so the Rav Yochanan's statement was, we're even further limiting it. When he said three, he meant three of tumah as it relates to a woman. Va'ika hadam Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Avra ben Nahar, v'hi pila. So the Gemara says, why don't we take the following into consideration? She is going by a river. She miscarries over this flowing river. So mevia karvan v'nechal. Halach achar Rav Nashim v'Rav Nashim v'lad ma'alyan yaladan. So over here, Rachmanis, she miscarried. Rachmanis, she doesn't even know what she miscarried. It got washed away by the river. And nevertheless, what's going to be our assumption? Our assumption is going to be that she gave birth to a fetus. A fetus that would demand a carbon. And not only that, the carbon can be brought. Not only that, the carbon can be eaten. Why? Halacha charov nashim. Because we're going to work with the majority. And the majority of women, even when they miscarried something which was a fetus, which would require a carbon to be brought at the end of her days of tuma, of yemei tuma and yemei tahara. So masisin kamrinan, shmaisis alo kamrinan. So once again, we're going to further limit the statement to Rav Yochanan. He was only making comments on mishnayos. In three mishnayos, we're going to treat a rove like a vadai. This is not a mishnah. This is a memra. It's Rav Yeshua ben Levi saying this. So it doesn't, it's just not included in his list. Now the Gemara says, why don't we take the following into consideration? And that is based on a sugya later on. Now, you know the expression, you had to be there. So this is the kind of Gemara right now where you had to be there. Now it happens to be that it's not so bad for us because we are going to be there. In a week and a half, we're going to be on the Gemara in Chav Tes. And over there, we get to enjoy one of the more difficult Gemaras that are coming up in our Masechta. In the meantime, however, I'm going to give us a really short version of the discussion. And so for our purposes right now, we could just simply get to the conclusion. And then in a week and a half, we're going to have the privilege of going through the entire Gemara and the entire discussion. Meisiv Rav Yossi Bar Rebbe, Chanina, Toeh V'lo Yadana Mai Tiyuftei. So he's asking a question based on a Mishnah regarding Toeh, a woman who miscounted, she mistook her count, and I didn't even know what her question was. So my love, love to Yufta, Ella Siata, Now that means to say that it's not only not a challenge, but actually it would support. So the Gemara says, "Lo, dima lo tiyuftav lo siyata." The Gemara says, "No, it wasn't a challenge, nor was it support as well. It was neutral." So the and that means to say that when we get to the Gemara over there, we'll see that there was a position that was taken. There was a challenge that was given from the Mishnah. The challenge from the Mishnah, the Gemara thought was a strong challenge. The Gemara ends up saying, no, that it wasn't a challenge. Now, when we get there, we'll see exactly what the give and take was and why our Gemara thought over here that at least when the Gemara said it wasn't a challenge, but rather was a proof, that would indicate that we have a Mishnah, the one coming up later on Chavtes, we have a Mishnah that supports this idea that Rov is to be treated like Vaday. And our Gemara is telling us right now, nah, it's not a disproof, but it's not a proof as well. It's neutral. And again, when we get there, we'll understand this little sequence of our Gemara a lot better. So you had to be there. The good news is we're going to get there. In the meantime, however, here's what we've done. We've heard a statement to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan said that in three areas in Halacha, we're going to treat a Rov like a Vaday. As I mentioned, it's a little bit challenging to understand his point because every Rov is to be treated like a Vaday. Okay, that requires a better understanding. And I apologize for not providing a better understanding. The Gemara now notes that there are many times we're going to treat like a Rov like a Vaday. So the Gemara has refined the statement of Rav Yochanan. First of all, he was only talking about that has to do with Tumat Tahara. He was not talking about Kol HaTorah Kula. Number two, he was only limiting his comments to that which is a Mishnah. Something which is a Memra, Shmaitata, so that he wasn't referring to that. Okay? And that's, so within Mishnayos, within Taharos, only three times we're going to make a Rov like a Vaday. The Gemara says, Lamute Mai. Now, obviously, when you're giving a list and you are you're making the list an exclusive list, you're obviously looking to exclude. That's what exclusivity is all about. So, Lamute Mai. So, what are we looking to exclude? As we are now on Yud Ches Amud Beis, about 10 lines from the top. Lamute Mai, Ilem, Lamute Ruba Deika Chazaka Bahadei, Delo Safin Alasa Trumam. So, the Gemara says, well, what about the following? I have a rove, but I have counter pressure. And the counter pressure is a chazaka. So it's a rove against a chazaka. And the Gemara says that maybe the counter pressure of the chazaka, we'll give examples in just a moment, but just at least in the conceptual. If I have a rove against a chazaka, now we know that a rove is better than a chazaka, ruba v'chazaka, ruba adef. But maybe what I'll say is that because of the counter pressure of the chazaka, I'm not going to be treating the rove like a vaday. What I'll be saying is that we're inclined to go like the rove, but we don't know for sure that we're going to go like a Rov. And so therefore, right, in the case of, let's say, for example, burning the Truma, it wouldn't burn the Truma. Wouldn't eat it, but it wouldn't burn it. So the Gemara says, now, all this sounds wonderful in concept, but V'hamer Rav Yochanan Chadazimna did not tinoka nimsa b'tzara isa u'batseik biyado. Now, I'm going to start with a child, and the child is playing with dough, and Rabbi Meir Matar v'chachamim mitam in. Now, what is the nature of the child? The nature of the child is litapeach. Child plays around. Now, what exactly is this child playing around with? So, if you take a look at Rashi, right, so the child plays around with dirt, but if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says litapeach bishrotzim, meaning that children love going outside, picking up lizards, playing with lizards, pulling off the lizard's tail. Okay, normal behavior for a child. Child is curious, and so this is normal operating behavior for a child. And so that means to say that there's a good chance, now I'm going to stress the words, good chance that this child now has previously been handling a sheretz, a dead sheretz, as probably the child killed it. So if that's true, I know I said if, but if that's true, so that makes now the child a rishon l'tuma, and the dough that the child now touches is going to be a sheni. So in other words, the child, if we're right, if our assumption is correct, so that means that the dough the child played with is going to be tummy. Now, this is Rav Meir's position. What's the base of Rav Meir? Now, Rav Meir says tahor, right? In the Brice that we just quoted, so it's a Mishnah. In the Mishnah we just quoted, so Rav Meir says tahor, and the Chachamim say tummy. Now, what's the base of Rav Meir? Because again, we're saying that the children played with the sheretz. We didn't see it happen. It's a assumption. It's a majority. And here's, again, one of those wonderful examples where the word chazaka and rov are kind of interchangeable. So, generally speaking, right, that's how you would say in English. Generally speaking, the child plays with shiratzim. We don't know that to be absolute, but generally that's how it works. And the isa zubecheskes tahor amenis. However, this dough, we know the dough was tahor. When the dough was prepared, it was prepared in a state of tahara. So that dough enjoys a chazaka. So now, smoch miyut lechazaka v'islei ruba. So now Rameir says like this. We're going to take the miyut of children who don't play with the sheretz. We're going to put it together with the chazaka. The chazaka plus the miyut is going to be greater than the rov. Right? Everyone see the equation the way I do? You take chazaka, you add it, you add miyut to it, and that will be greater than rov.
Based on that, a rov could never be the chazaka, because you always combine a chazaka with a miyut, and then there's that case closed.
According to Rameir. Right. Okay. Just, I take your statement. I took out the question mark and I put in a period. but I added though. But you know, I agree with you. But according to Rameir, v'rabbanan miyuta kamanda leisa dami v'ruba v'chazaka ruba adif. Now the Chachamim's position is as follows: that when you have a rov, so you have more than a rov. You have a rov, which tells us that the miyut is non-existent halachically, meaning the rov is so strong that it totally overshadows the miyut. And so therefore, whenever I have a rov versus a chazaka, so ruba v'chazaka ruba adif. V'amar Reish Lakish mishum Rabbi Yoshia. Okay, so where are we right now with the Mishnah, a good understanding of the Mishnah regarding the child who may have played around with shratzim and then touched the dough. Rameir says the dough is tahor. The Chachamim say the dough is tameh. Rameir says it's tahor because we're taking the chazaka of the dough plus the miyut of the children who don't play. And that we put the two of them together, that exceeds rov. We take the position of the Chachamim. Rov and miyut. Miyut is totally overshadowed. So it's just a simple question of rov versus chazaka. Rov is going to win. We're not done yet. One more step in this discussion. V'amrish lakish mishum Rabbi Yoshia zui chazaka shesorfen alav esatruma. So Reish Lakish is of the opinion that this chazaka is so strong. Again, chazaka over here, meaning this presumption that you would be sorif esatruma. Rav Yochanan amar inzu chazaka shesorfen alav esatruma. And Rav Yochanan says that this is not a strong enough presumption in which you are going to burn the truma. Now, Rav Yochanan says very clearly that this rov over here is not going to be treated like a vadai. So we see that there are other cases that are excluded. The only problem is, this is Rav Yochanan saying it. Meaning, what is Rav Yochanan coming to do? Exclude a case. Exclude a case that he himself reported is already excluded. Meaning, Rav Yochanan is going to make a statement, and by virtue of the statement, we are going to exclude cases. Over here, Rav Yochanan himself was the one who already excluded it. So, it's not that he's biased, it's that he's right now, he hasn't given us any new information. So, the Gemara now is going to continue to look for a scenario in which we're going to find where we're going to treat the rov like a vada. Let's recap our day, and tomorrow we'll just finish up the sugya in the beginning. We went over, once again, the Mishnah's Mashal regarding a woman, the chazaka of any dam found in the Prozdor to be coming from the Makor, and that was the easy and Mishnah version of the discussion. The Gemara's version is less than simple and much more complicated. As the Gemara introduced to us the concept of bisecting the Prozdor between the interior and the exterior, and the various opinions, four in total, in terms of where the dam is to be found, and based on various either concerns or assumptions, we're going to make of the woman either Tara Lagamre, a Safek, or a Vadai Temeya. So with the Gemara's discussion, admittedly, it became much more complicated. And even at the end of the Gemara, it even got more complicated as the Gemara introduced another variable, floor versus ceiling. Then for the rest of today, we went over the statement to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan said that three areas in Taharos, in Mishnayos Taharos, we're going to have a Rov, and we're going to treat the Rov like a Vadai. He enumerated the three. They are Shilya Chaticha and, Mekor Shilya and Chaticha. We went through the three. What was he looking to exclude? So that was the question that we're still answering. And when we get back tomorrow morning, we'll continue and hopefully answer that question.